You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcino, a.k.a. Slobby Bacala. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 302. On today's episode, we're joined by Scooter Toots, aka Drew Steele of Posting and Toasting, and we're going to hand out two, count them, two report cards. One to Emmanuel Mudiay, one to Troy Williams. Which player did we like more this past season? It's a real stumper, right? Listen to find out. Let's start the show. Hit it, Marf.
Yes.
So we are gathered here today to hand out two report cards. One for Emmanuel Mudiay. One for Troy Williams. I asked Alex the same question yesterday, Drew. If we want to keep our listeners around till the end of the show, who are we saving? Who are they here for?
They're probably here for Mudiay, right?
You think
because
so?
Because I think, didn't Troy Williams only play barely 20 games?
Yes, he played 17 games.
Okay, so yeah, why don't we go Troy Williams first? Because I think you and I probably both have a lot on Emmanuel Mudiay.
I think I have more on Troy Williams only because I like thinking about Troy Williams and I don't like thinking about Emmanuel Mudiay. But
oh, I actually like thinking about Emmanuel Mudiay, but probably for the wrong reasons.
See, an older version of me would have been like all about just like, I want to hate on this guy for 2 hours. But the older version of me is trying to like chill out a little bit. So I'm like, I'm not calling you unchill.
No, that's understandable. I don't think I'm really going to go too hard. It's just I find Mudiay probably a lot more interesting than Troy Williams.
Fair enough.
From a prospect perspective. So that's why I find like him just more like fascinating. Just the whole thing about Emmanuel Mudiay.
All right. So, no, that's fair. That's fair. So let's start with Troy Williams. Let's start with some positives. Do you want to go first or shall I?
I'll go first because okay. I find if that's okay.
Of course, I give my guests the option, you know?
All right, perfect. I actually like Troy Williams. I like what he's shown in those, you know, 17 games mm-hmm. that he had. He hustles, he's really athletic, he gets, you know, to the rim with ease. Those, you know, those sort of things. He competes on defense. It's like he's everything you want Lance Thomas to be. Right? Yes. That's how I see it. He's everything you want Lance Thomas to be. And I just enjoyed watching him play on, like, you know, the end of like a miserable season. And I think what I find the most interesting about Troy Williams is his zone true shooting percentage. And if you guys are not familiar with that, I did a whole article on Posting and Toasting about the stat I created. That kind of measures, you know, where players shoot. Mm-hmm. Troy Williams is second on the team in zone true shooting. And he's at 64.7%. And that's basically saying he takes more efficient shots on the court. So he's taking more threes and more shots at the rim.
Yeah.
And he in his 17 games, he had a 57% true shooting percentage. So he's shooting, you know, above league average. And he's in that profile is – you know, very, very good. So it's like, it's very promising to see, you know, what Troy Williams could potentially be moving into next season.
No, for sure. He takes a ton of shots at the rim. And I would say, I think that's like by far where his highest frequency is, I believe. But he takes, it's definitely high frequency for a wing. He takes a ton of shots at the rim. And when he doesn't, he tends to shoot from beyond the arc. We are not on negatives just yet, but he needs to get his shooting up a little bit. But if you look at his heat maps, you know, they're very Maury ball. They're very good there. Like you said, he's got speed getting out in transition. His finishing is just really excellent. You guys have all seen these, you know, ridiculous dunks that he has, either in, you know, transition or putback dunks. But he gets to the rim. His rim frequency is actually 96th percentile for a wing. Now, granted, you know, all of these stats that I'm going to give you, not too many, but the stats I will give you about Troy Williams, they're all, he played 17 minutes per game in 17 games. But this stuff does kind of match the eye test with him. So that's why I think it, like, means something. And he draws a ton of contact to finish up, like, my finishing well at the rim. He's actually 84th percentile on percentage of shots he's fouled on. So he draws a lot of contact, and he's really good at finishing through contact. 96th percentile in his and one percentage, which is how many of his shots that he is fouled on does he make the shot. He actually makes just under 40% of the shots he's fouled on, which is really outstanding for a wing player. You mentioned defense. He's got a great nose for the ball. Fizdale talked about liking, you know, getting deflections and, you know, getting steals and moving in transition. And, you know, he was on the Grizzlies during Fizdale's first year, and he had a 99th percentile steal rate during his time in Memphis and a 97th percentile steal rate during his time with the Knicks. So seems like something he could keep up. You also mentioned him on the boards. He, you know, again, small sample size for this year, but 99th percentile offensive rebounding, 84th percentile, excuse me, defensive rebounding. And I think, like, to, like, for me to wrap up my positives, when he's out there, that style of play that he plays and helps the Knicks play is his style of player they don't have a lot of. And it's an efficient, good style of play, at least offensively. You know, of Knicks regulars, he's behind only Ron Baker, Chris Stapps, Jarrett Jack, and Kyle O'Quinn in plus minus. Like, on a per-game basis, he's minus 0.6. And when he's out there, the Knicks are 4.5 points better per 100. They're like a half point worse on defense per 100, but 4.8 points better on offense. And all those things we've talked about, I think, really, you know, contribute to that. His transition, his finishing, getting steals, all that good stuff. So, am I leaving anything out in this love fest for Troy Williams? I think we covered it.
I think so. Just one thing I want to add, too, is that his defensive RPM, mm-hmm, is, he's ranked 40th out of 90 small, you know, like, registered small forwards on ESPN. It's 0.07. So, like, it's barely, you know, it's barely a positive, but, you know, he's definitely not a net negative when he's on the floor.
Yeah, he just does a bunch of stuff. Like,
exactly.
You know, and some of it, like, that rebounding, I don't know if he would be elite like that over the course of a season, but, like, he does rebound, you know, he does get out in transition, he does get steal, like, all these little things, it helps to contribute to winning basketball. On the flip side, he's got a couple negatives. We mentioned it earlier, inconsistent shooting.
Mm-hmm.
He had some nice stretches, but then he finished, but it was, like, real streaky. He didn't take a ton of threes, but 31% from three. What do you think of his form when you look at him? This is what worries me, because I feel like his form's a little janky.
It could be. I mean, to be honest, I didn't really notice too much with his form. Okay. One thing I did notice, though, like, he wasn't always, like, set.
Right.
Like, I felt like he always was, like, fading to one direction.
Yeah, or he another. Does. He's but, always running around, like, which is a good thing, but...
Yeah, but yeah, he doesn't, like, settle down. I think that could be potentially correctable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like, you know, Michael Kidd Gilchrist form or anything.
Right. It's not or Joakim Noah. He's got a little bit of this, like, leg kick out. Like, I feel like it's his right leg, but it's, like, a little weird.
Did you mention leg kickouts?
Huh?
We have someone else on the pod we need to talk about with leg kickouts.
yeah, we will get to him. But what do you think? I'm curious, like, how much a difference do you think a 3-point shot makes for him? Is this make or break? Will it make him really good if he has a great 3-point shot? Like, will he still be okay without one? Like, where do you think that falls in terms of importance for a player like him?
If he can, you know, increase to even just, like, league average-ish, so, you know, like, 35% or a little over, like, 35, 36. Just him coming off the bench and just, you know, being a threat to take a three, make them a little more, then that opens up more driving lanes for him to get to the rim, which he's really good at. Right. So I think that opens up his game a lot, and then that makes him, you know, a good, I'll say a good role player on, like, you know, like a decent team where he comes off the bench, he plays 15, 20 minutes. You know, basically what Lance Thomas was before Lance Thomas got injured in that giant contract.
Right.
Like, that's what I think, you know, his what Troy Williams can become, just a more athletic version of that. And I think that's actually really valuable in this league, no matter if he's a starter or coming off the bench.
Absolutely. Do you have any other negatives from this season?
For Troy Williams?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, like I said, like you mentioned, like, you know, 17 minutes per game, 17 games. There wasn't that much to go off of. Right. And even if you go, like, back to, like, Memphis stuff, like, he wasn't playing that much.
No, so, like, he wasn't. He didn't play for Houston, like, at all. There's really no numbers to look at there. I think, like, his handle is a little weak, you know. He did tend to turn the ball over a little bit. He was, like, pretty low as far as wings go. I think it was 12th percentile. And he fouled a little bit. Again, it's so hard with these amount of minutes. But I do think, like, you know, his in, like, the half court especially, his handle's not the tightest. It's definitely adequate for, like, putting pressure on the defense. Like you said, I don't expect him ever to be starter quality at all. But I do expect him to be, like, I don't know, maybe, like, an eighth man, I think he could be, you know. Like,
maybe. No, I think that as well. You know, he, like I said, just comes in, he plays about 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And he just gives you just, you know, just quality minutes where he's not going to, like, he's not going to cost you much because he does all, like, the right things. He takes threes, he takes shots at the rim, he hustles on defense, he gets out in transition. Like,
yeah, he just puts pressure on the other team, like, on both sides in different ways, you know.
Exactly. So you can't get too upset that, like, you know, if he's not making his threes at, like, a super efficient clip, or he's going to turn the ball over a little more, because I think those costs aren't as bad to, like, the benefits that he brings.
For sure. If you were to grade him for this season, what grade would you give him?
I would say a B. I think a B is a fair grade for Troy Williams.
That is exactly what I had.
Look at that.
Oh, my God. Simpatico, to use an old man's phrase that we dare not mention here.
I was going to say, is that Phil, right?
Yeah, in his press conference.
I was going to say, is that Latin for something? Like, I'm not completely blank.
Well, it was just, I mean, I forgive you for that. It wasn't exactly like one of his iconic things, but I always thought that was funny. He's like, you know, because he talked a lot of the talk that you want to hear your GM say, but even when he was saying the right thing, he was saying it in, like, weird words. It's like, I gotta find someone I'm simpatico with. It's like, what are you, from, like, 1920s Brooklyn? Like, flushing the toilet? Get out of here, Phil Jackson.
I mean, that's what Phil was, though.
Yeah.
He was, like, the crazy old man who just said crazy things, and we're like, okay.
That's true. So, final grade, we're giving him a B. Next season, we close out these player evaluations by saying kind of what we want out of them. There is no contract wishy-washiness, I believe. I think he just has a $1.5 million contract for this upcoming season. I'm looking at this right now. So
that sounds about
right. Yeah. So I'm happy with that. I don't know, like, would you... I don't think we need to try to extend him before we see a little bit more, but...
Yeah, no, I would want to see, like, if he can continue to improve upon the things that he did well in this small stretch. And if he does really well, you go, okay, great, then let's, you know, you should probably think about extending him, but not extending him like Phil extended Lance Thomas, you know, for that giant contract.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you don't think Lance Thomas is Draymond Green, in other words?
No. I do not think Lance Thomas is Draymond Green. I don't think he's Draymond Green in any way.
The thing,
at all.
I don't see it at all. Here's the thing I'll say about this. For people who are worried that David Fizdale, like, actually thinks this, I think you don't have to worry about that. I think if you read the quote, it's a little bit more innocuous. He's talking about, like, skill sets, not skill quality. But I don't really see a skill set overlap. And he's certainly nowhere near him in terms of the quality of those skills. So I don't love hearing this from Fizdale. Like, I see what he's trying to do, and I certainly would not want him to disparage players in public. I just don't think that works. It may have worked once upon a time, but even then, I think players were just kind of like, overcoming coaches being dicks in like the media. I'm not a big believer in like being negative with people in front of a lot of people in order to motivate them. I think most people don't react well to that. But there is a fine line that I think I'd like him to tell, like not being so outlandish, but I'll say this. I don't coach these guys, and maybe they eat this shit up. And if that's the case, then like, okay. But it does seem a little silly.
I mean, I hope so in that sense, but I feel like those sort of comments is what like you and I would do joking around on like the podcast, like crazy hyperbolic jokes. Like, oh yeah, of course Lance Thomas is Draymond Green. Just, you know, they're the same height.
Right.
And they play defense. Like, that's like stuff like, you know, like fans joking around would say it.
Yes.
Fizdale, if that's what, you know, if Lance Thomas wants to hear that and Fizz is doing something, you know, go for it. But I mean, he's just not Draymond Green, like at all. Like,
no, nothing, he's not.
Like Draymond Green doesn't stumble on like his 2 feet and then like blow a layup or hit the side of the backboard on like on a floater. Like that, Draymond Green, you know,
he doesn't have double clutch two handed layups.
No, yeah, Draymond doesn't do that.
Oh my god,
you know, Draymond operates from the elbow and just picks apart defenses. I love Draymond Green. So we can do a whole podcast on how I think Draymond is fantastic.
I mean, and clearly a fantastic player. But you know, David Fizdale, he likes to learn from his mistakes. So just tone it down a little bit, Fizdale.
I will say though, in a potential tank season, I do want to see Lance Thomas play the Draymond role just for entertainment purposes. Because like Kristaps isn't coming back at the beginning of the season. There isn't like crazy talent on the thing. Like, yeah. Why not have Lance Thomas play the five, run the transition offense, and all that sort of stuff? It'd be fun.
Yeah, this might be a 4D chess move. He's just setting us up for the stealth tank. Not that they'll need to, but
no, they don't. They don't need the stealth tank.
I want to talk about Emmanuel Mudiay, but before we do that, just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. I almost called it 5 tunes. Again, I haven't done that in a little bit. Head on over to 5 tunes and rate us iStars. It's like this weird thing I've got going on. But Emmanuel Mudiay. Yeah.
Emmanuel Mudiay. So the first time I came on this podcast, that, you know, I did like a giant piece on Emmanuel Mudiay, mm-hmm. about like what we should be expecting, and I don't think nothing changed. Like everything I said in that article pretty much exactly happened for the remainder of the season.
Yes.
Like he doesn't finish well at the rim.
Nope.
He's not that athletic. He
nope.
Turns the ball over pretty well. He's atrocious on defense. His shot is pretty much a disaster.
Disaster.
Like, I notice, you know, in watching his Nuggets stuff, like, he doesn't always have his feet set, and then he kicks it out. Mm-hmm. And then, like, watching the Knicks games, and then you notice, oh, he also shoots on the way down.
Yep.
So it's like, he's not set when he shoots, and then he releases on the way down.
But he's
and
also like, got a hitch in his arm somewhere, too. He like, spasms a little bit. It's like...
Yeah, it's...
It is crazy. Broken.
Yes.
Broken. Like, I don't know how. When he came over, I was like, you know what? 3-point shooting, sometimes it takes a while. Shit, you know, players like Jason Kidd, I mean, I know he's a Hall of Famer, but he started shooting threes when he was like 32 or whatever, you know. So I'm like, eh, maybe. And he had those good numbers from the corners with Denver, but oh my God, can he still not shoot? Like, not even close.
Yeah, he shot way worse with New York than he did in Denver. So in Denver, he had a 50.4 true shooting percentage, which is also terrible.
Yeah, not good.
But with New York, he had a 42.8 true shooting percentage. That's, you know, a complete disaster.
We're going to get you right, kid. We're going to get you right, kid.
Yeah, and then they make it worse. His zone true shooting percentage, 39.9.
Oh, boy.
Like...
Well, so that's, he was so that means that he's taken a bunch of mid-range shots, right? I mean, in addition to not knocking them down.
Exactly. So it's not only that he's taking too many mid-range; he's not taking enough threes and shots in the restricted area.
And
he's not making them too. Like, it's that sort of combination. So he's basically just taking shots like just outside the restricted area and mid-range.
Yeah.
And there's a higher penalty, you know, with, you know, the formula and everything for taking those shots. And we know that just from, you know, whether it's advanced, you know, analytics or just basic math.
Yeah.
Like, they tell you, like, those shots aren't, you know, efficient or good. And Emmanuel, you know, takes those shots. And he with the Knicks, he took 55 mid-range field goal attempts.
And, oh, man.
In 22 games. So, like, that's far too many.
And for those who may not have listened to the episode where I lost my mind over this, he was in the now infamous, to me anyway, and wonderfully reported and sourced Mike Vorkunov article about why Jeff Hornacek's team was shooting so many mid-range twos. And Moutier was one of the guys who went on record and said, you know, in Denver, they had, I think it was in Denver, they had a rule that you could only do 15 or they had to, like, run laps or whatever it was. He's like, and in New York, Jeff tells me just to, like, shoot it whenever I'm open. And he seemed to take that to heart. And like, yeah, enthusiastically, because it's one thing if your coach tells you to do something and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, but these guys also, you know, they get paid millions of dollars to play this sport for a living. Not all of them, but a lot of them still like read stuff online. Like, the smarter ones can like figure out also from like just watching what's going on out there. Like, they know what like Morey ball is, they know what efficiency is. You know, when LeBron first embraced this shit, he was one of the first superstars to, like, really start talking about efficiency. But, like, everyone, like, understands the game now. So, I'm not going to kill him too much because his coach was telling him to do it. But the fact that he kind of, like, happily talked about it is another thing that makes me question his basketball IQ, which I don't think is the best.
Yeah, there's that issue as well. Just to do a little thing for the mid-range as well. I'm not necessarily too much against mid-range shots. Like, those are the shots that defenses do give up. Like, they want you to take it. If you can find a way to exploit the mid-range by being hyper-efficient, you know, like Trey Burke was, for example, like, that's not a bad shot. And sure. That's not. But, however, you need to be as elite as, you know, Trey Burke was in his run with New York. You need to be Kevin Durant. You need to be Steph Curry. You need to be, you know, like, I don't think Anthony Davis has the super high mid-range field, Chris Paul. Like, you need to be those guys to, you know, take those shots and make them in order for it to work.
And like, when I say, like, I'm not someone who is extreme, like, never take a mid-range shot. Like, you do have to take them in the flow of the game, keep them honest once in a while, but you just got to keep it down, you know.
And you can't do what Jeff did with the Knicks, and basically the whole offense with Porzingis was elbow post-up mid-range contested shots. Like, that was the the offense.
It was one of the big problems I had with Hornacek.
Yeah, and it's just not a smart way to do an offense. Like, if you want to, you know, late in the clock and the defense is switching things up and you got to go to Porzingis at the elbow, fine. He's 7'3". He could shoot over pretty much everyone.
Right.
Like, that I kind of get. But early in the clock, you know, in the first quarter, oh, we're just going to run power.
Yep. It was definitely at a point where it's like, okay, there's two options here. You're either calling too many of these plays, Jeff, or it's a set play with a read and Porzingis is just taking that mid-ranger too often.
Too often,
and yes. So, like, either one, you either need to stop calling those plays or hold Porzingis accountable and be like, look, you can't do this every single time, you know. So either way is not a good look for Jeff, I would say. Getting back to Moutier, I mean, you mentioned his defense. Like, not only is he, I don't think, you know, just like a fair, he's weirdly like, he's got good straight ahead speed, but I don't think his side to side lateral quickness is great on the defensive end. Like, even when he looks locked in, but so often he just looked lost. Like, he had no idea where he was supposed to be or didn't care.
Yeah, it's like a combination of both. He doesn't know when to go over a screen or to go under a screen either. And then he kind of like gets caught up in the screen because he doesn't know what to do. Like, he doesn't commit to either or. He just kind of just runs into it because he doesn't know what to do.
I never saw him. I mean, never. I might, like, he might have, but he so rarely aggressively got over a screen. Like, I can't remember seeing him do that, honestly.
No, neither have I. And to make it worse with Moutier for this season for defensive RPM, there's 103 point guards who are listed on ESPN. Do you want to take a guess where Emmanuel ranks?
133?
Well, yes, 133. No, he's 130. He's last. Yeah. He's last defensive RPM. He has a negative 3.65. Interestingly enough, Trey Burke is 100.
Yeah.
At three, you know, negative 3.17. But,
I mean, yeah, like,
Emmanuel's that disastrous kind of defensively. Like, you could take, you know, take defensive RPM with a grain of salt if you want to, because you don't know the formula or whatever way you want to put it. When you're that, but when you're at negative three, you know, almost at negative four for defensive RPM, like, that, it's telling.
Yeah.
Like, it matches the eye test.
That's the thing. A lot of these stats you have to take with a grain of salt. When they show someone like all the way at the top or all the way at the bottom, like, it's meaningful. When they're kind of in the middle, it might be a little like, I'm not sure what this says exactly. You know, let me look at more tape. But when you're literally last, like, it's probably not good.
Like, Isaiah Thomas was 102, which is kind of funny. Like, Emmanuel Mudiay had a worse defensive RPM than Isaiah Thomas, who's, you know, 5'5" and, you know, had a broken hip.
Right. And this is the kind of thing when, I mean, actually, I'll save my thoughts on Trey Burke there. Forgot we haven't done his yet, but you did mention his bad defensive. You know, I'll quickly say, this is one of the reasons why I'm not as bullish on Trey Burke as some, because if he's not playing in an elite offensive clip, which, like, I don't think he'll maintain, could be wrong, then that really limits him, because his defense has not been so strong. It's been pretty poor, and not for lack of trying, but...
No, he I know it's supposed to be about Emmanuel Mudiay, but Trey Burke does try. Like, Trey Burke does try, unlike Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yes.
But Trey Burke is also, like, you know, barely 6 feet tall. Like, he is, like, he's physically limited to what he can specifically do. So he has to compete, even, you know, he has to maximize his effort on the defensive end just to be, like, average.
And that's
really tough. That's going to take a lot from even his offense as well.
For sure. And this is a good transition. Like, speaking of size, I really struggled to come up with positives for Emmanuel Mudiay. He does still have that he's large. You know, he is 6'5". He could, in theory, use his size to his advantage on both sides of the court, but on offense as well, on drives. But that's part of the weird thing about, I don't know if he mentioned this, that he just, not only is he a poor finisher, but he just, like, falls down on an alarming number of drives.
Far too many, yeah.
Yeah, like, his balance is all out of whack or something. Or he's trying to draw fouls and, like, doesn't realize that it doesn't work. I don't know what the deal is. And the only other positive I could honestly think of in this season was that he showed some vision and some touch on a couple of nice outlet passes. But I almost felt like it didn't matter because, you know, he was so turnover prone and so many of his passes were, like, of the lazy telegraphed variety, just, like, right into someone's gut. You know, those kind of passes where they'd be, like, surprised, like, what is the ball doing here? You know, I'm playing defense across the court on someone and I'm not even looking, and now the ball is in my gut. Like, thank you, Mudiay. So it almost makes me feel like, is that even good touch and vision? Or are you just getting lucky and heaving it? Although I don't remember a bunch of heaves that, like, went out of bounds or whatever. But that's pretty much all I could think of in the positive column.
Which I have two... I would say maybe smaller positives, if that...
Let's hear him.
So I will say, this is, like, when I talk about really small sample size, that first game when he and Frank came off the bench against Indiana, I thought they worked really well together.
Mm-hmm.
And they never... It's basically go back to issues with Jeff Hornacek. He never went back to that for the remainder of the season. And I don't know why, because I felt like those two... almost, like, needed one another, because they were both, you know, they struggle handling the ball and they struggle with certain things. Like, Frank didn't really go to the rim that much, but Emmanuel did go to the rim.
Right.
And, you know, Emmanuel was the, you know, with, like, the shooting and everything, and there's, you know, if a primary action didn't work, he could kick it back out to Frank or Emmanuel, and then they would run, like, a pick and roll action or, you know, a dribble handoff. Like, it felt like there was a good balance between those two. So I think that could be promising, where Emmanuel Mudiay may be better, you know, with another ball handler, and he has the size to play, you know, to guard one, like, you know, the actual body. Whether he guards them, he's not going to, but he can physically guard a shooting guard, for example.
Right.
And then another positive, this is almost like a sneak peek into what I'm going to be working on for an article sometime next week for Posting and Toasting.
Okay.
So there is a stat back in December I co-created with a couple of my former colleagues. So shout out to Will Muckian and Joseph Nation, you know, for helping me out with this, because we kind of brainstormed the idea. Do you remember John Hollinger's pure point PPR stat? It's basically, like, you know, taking into account that turnovers affect the game more than assists.
I do. I'm not like super well versed in it, but I remember it. Yeah.
Okay, so we basically have a more mathematically ground version of that statistic, and Moutier, during his time with the Knicks, was in the 80th percentile in the in this new PPR. It was actually fourth on the Knicks, and it was actually ahead of Frank Ntilikina.
So what exactly does this tell you again? Like, what is this stat giving us?
This tells you that he's minimizing turnovers and increasing assists. So he's actually controlling the ball more. So it's not like his playmaking ability or his actual passing ability, but he is, you know, minimizing turnovers while also increasing his assists, because there's a larger penalty on turnovers relative to the assists.
Interesting.
I hope I explained that.
I just think of him as someone who had so many high turnover games. So I'm like, was he having more assists than I realized?
There were a couple games he did have high assist numbers. And remember, this is a really small sample too.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. He did have, like, he had 41 turnovers during his time. Trey Burke, for example, only had 43, and he had a lot more turnovers. I mean, a lot more assists than Moutier. So kind of keep that in mind as well. But I think there could be something there with his passing that could be improved upon if he can, I don't know, like, right, do everything else better. Like, that's the only positive. But again, it's not.
Yeah.
I don't know how real this is, because, you know, historically he hasn't had the best figure.
Yes. So all that being said, what would you grade his season with the Knicks? Small sample size, but how would you grade him?
I don't want to be too hard, so I'm just going to say a D minus.
I have him at F plus. I mean,
like, I was going with F, but I didn't want to be too hard off, you know, too hard, because I don't want to be that guy and be like, F is terrible.
I know, like, I know, and it feels so bad, but like, his net rating again, small in the time that he was on the court, he just didn't show me much of anything, and he was a minus 16 net rating, by far the worst on the Knicks. Ron Baker, who we talked about yesterday, was actually the highest on the Knicks at plus 4.1 with Kristaps right behind him. But, you know, the only reason I gave him enough, like, what I'll say, why I gave him the plus, which is like a corny joke, but also he does have the hardest position to adapt to when you go to a situation with new teammates and a new system. So I give him a little bit of a break there, but...
Or a lack of a system?
Yes, you know what I mean. And so obviously everyone who's listened to me more than a couple times knows that I'm not a huge Hornacek fan, so that factors into it too. But he just did so many of the things that we'd seen him do already, you know, in his first couple years in Denver. So it's one of the reasons, like, I'm just, like, not... I don't think he's going to wind up being like a serviceable NBA player. I could very well be wrong. Like, this, you know, he is still young, but I'm not seeing it so far. As far as next season goes, he's got 1 year left on his rookie deal at $4.3 million, and then after that he becomes a restricted free agent. So given that he's going to be around next season, barring some sort of trade, how would you like to see him used?
I know this is going to sound absolutely crazy, and just kind of like, when you really think about, like, what I'm going to say, like, I think he should probably be, like, he needs to compete with Ron Baker to be, like, the off-ball bench guard.
Yeah.
And, like, if he can't beat out Ron Baker, I mean...
But that's what I'm saying, like, that...
Yeah, like that kind of says a lot. Like, I don't know if he can beat out Ron.
Like, Sorry, keep going.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, because Ron has, like, you guys mentioned this all in the podcast yesterday, but Ron has terrible counting stats, but the Knicks just play better when he's on the floor. Like, I can't really explain it. Like, the plus-minus kind of suggests it, and you watch the games, they kind of suggest it. Well, he just moves the ball right. He makes the right pass. He drives when he's supposed to. He takes the three when he's supposed to, mm-hmm. sort of thing. Like he just works like that. And for, like, Moutier, like, it's like, the complete opposite. And I don't think he – like, I haven't seen enough improvement of him, like, year over year between, like, Denver and now to suggest that he's going to be a good lead guard in the NBA, and I think he may be better off being, like, you know, that secondary guy playing off to someone who does run an offense better, where yeah. he can drive to the rim and make an assist when he needs to. I think that's probably his better role, kind of like what, like, Ron Baker was at Wichita State with Fred VanVleet.
Right.
So I think that, so, like, I think Moutier has to probably try to, you know, be that sort of role, and out to beat Ron Baker. And if he can't beat out Baker, I mean, I just probably wouldn't play him if he signed him.
Right. No, I mean, and that's exactly where I'm at. I think he absolutely has to be behind Frankenberg in terms of the depth chart for, you know, that. I know he said guards, but when you think about that, like, lead guard sort of role. And I think it'll be a real test for how much does Fizdale believe in the stats that he says he believes in, because I think, you know, that you're going to see a similar – I'm pessimistic on Moutier. I'm not trying to beat up on him, but I'm very pessimistic. And I think it's very I could see a situation unfolding where, like, a month or so into the season, we've got maybe not as extreme, but a similar gap in, like, things like net rating, things like plus-minus, in this kind of lineup data, on-off stuff, the kind of things that, you know, can, like, get at, you know, your effects that aren't necessarily in the box score. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how long Fizdale keeps, like, a Moutier, keeps his role larger than a Ron Baker's. Because in, like, theory, you have more, you have a lot more potential with Moutier, like, in theory. In practice, I don't really see it, other than the fact that he was drafted high, you know, to be honest. But I get why they would want to give him more of a chance than Ron Baker at first. But I'm also just very curious to see how long that chance lasts.
No, I'm with you, because it's also not just, like, the point guards with Trey Burke and Moody. Like, it's also Ron Baker. It's also Damian Dotson. It's also Tim Hardaway Jr. Because if Fizdale is saying just guards in general, there's, you know, there's four guards I'd probably play ahead of him. If I did my math, did I count right? Or is that five? No, it's five.
It's
like, yeah, so there's, like, five guards I'd probably play ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, if Jared Jack's coming back, I would also probably play Jared Jack ahead of him as well. So, like, that's kind of the level it's kind of at.
I mean, it's true. Jared Jack was a much more effective player than Moutier last year.
Oh, yeah, and especially for this PPR statistic, I mean, Jared Jack was in the 95th percentile. Ron Baker was actually ahead of Moutier in his limited minutes, and Trey Burke was, I think, like, second in the league.
Yeah, I mean, not going to jump ahead too much, but Jack.
I don't mean to jump ahead too much.
No. But it's useful. It's useful to compare, you know, and it helps illustrate, like, what those differences are and why they matter. And, like, as much as Jared Jack was infuriating, and I would say mostly for his defense and things about Frank or whatever, he kept his turnovers way down. Like, he barely turned it over at all. Got a lot of assists. So, you know, he played a valuable role, and it's something that, like, as much as people complained about him, that's how bad Moutier was, that he didn't come close to sniffing that kind of production, you know?
You know, Jack put players in, like, you know, good shots, you know, for them to make. Like, he ran the offense, right, you know, lack of an offense, really well. Like, Jack knew what he was doing. Like, Moutier just didn't do that.
Yes.
At all.
So, not high hopes, but hey, I'll be happier than anyone if Fizdale somehow gets Emmanuel right.
Yeah, Fizdale can tap, because I still, for some reason, even with all this, like, you know, the criticism and doubt, I still feel like there is a player somewhere in Emmanuel Moutier.
I see it. Like, I don't think people are crazy when they talk about it. I just don't believe it.
No, neither do I. But, like, yeah, if Fizdale could kind of see what we kind of, like, oddly see and turn Moutier into, like, a valuable role player off the bench, I mean, sign this guy for a lifetime
contract. Seriously. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, Drew. This is all the time we've got. Why don't you let the people know where they can find you online and if there's anything that you want to plug?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on Twitter at the handle ScooterToots.
ScooterToots!
Yep. And I'm going to be with Posting and Toasting, moving on out. So I'll be primarily doing Nick's stuff. And, you know, during the off season, I'll probably, you know, stretch some things as well to cover, maybe incorporate some NDA or whatever. But yes, I'll be Posting and Toasting, moving on out, so you can definitely find my writing there. And then a whole thing on Fizdale's time with the Grizzlies, you can go check that out.
An excellent read. Thanks again for joining us, Drew.
Thanks, James.
Oh, yeah. Bow, 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 bow. Chica-chica. Another great talk, by my standards anyway, this time with the lovely and talented Drew Steele. Want to thank him again for coming on the show. And I want to thank you guys for listening to this episode of Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Subscriptions help us grow. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Tell your librarian. They're much cooler than you think. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. And if it's brown, flush it right down. Always salt the pasta water. And take that for data. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace.